This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 40% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I saw this pop up again on my timeline. Have you guys seen this guy that's gone viral on TikTok? That he puts his face in like a bowl of ice cold, a specific type of water too, like it's Saratoga water or something. And he claimed, you know, he's like, oh my God, this is how I get started in the morning. And, you know, it makes my skin better, et cetera. He's gotten viral. Now people are just making fun of him overall. But it just popped up in my timeline again.
Doing it. Do you guys want to do this where like we require
ourselves face in a bowl of water?
Cold water.
We also have to right be shirtless when we do it because the dude is ripped. You know, I think we have to go full on into the bit, the tape over the mouth and everything like that.
The tape over the mouth. Like what?
Well, so I think it actually, so it
oh, have you
forces
done this?
You to breathe, it forces you to obviously breathe in through your nose. It creates better breathing, something like
there's
that.
He's a lifestyle influencer, I guess, named Ashton Hall, and he shared his morning routine. Like, he gets up at 3:50, and, it's you know, early. He's got it mapped out by, like, minute by minute. Like, he reads a book for X amount of minutes, and he does
He wipes his face with a banana peel and everything like that.
Yeah, motivational videos. He dunks his head into this ice water. Then he runs on a treadmill. Finally applies, a banana peel to his face before he goes to work or whatever. I mean, the whole thing is insane. All I saw, I've seen it a few days now, and it just came up during the break. And so I was like, have you guys, everybody's seen this by now, right?
Yeah, it became pretty viral pretty quick.
I mean, I'm guessing that would wake you up pretty good. Stick your head in a ice cold bowl of water.
I'm waking up at 3:50 a.m. just to put my face in some ice water.
Wow, that he gets his day started then. It changed your whole routine. Like, I would love to be the guy that tells you I'm waking up, I'm setting the alarm at 5 a.m. and I'm going to the gym and I'm going to shower and then I'm going to be ready to rock and roll. That's just not me. You know?
It could be.
It could be.
You could make some changes. You could be like this guy.
I enjoy setting the alarm for about 7:15 in the morning, taking the dog outside, then getting ready to work, and then making my way here. And then in the afternoon, I've my routine is the gym late afternoon when it's empty and it's not busy. It's easy. I go around. I try to go by 5 o'clock if I can. If not, I go after dinner, but I try to do it before dinner.
After dinner is worse.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. By the time you're full, you go back home, and then to get back out is tough. So there's a perfect window with our hours and our show from 2:30 to 5. It's a great time to go.
Somewhere in that range, that's when you tend to go? Yeah. It depends on me. My mornings are the same.
Yeah.
After 2 o'clock varies.
The schedule is going to be thrown off a little bit because tomorrow we've got opening day baseball, so we'll be out at Kauffman Stadium throughout the entire day. Hope to see you guys outside right around Gate D if you're making your way to Kauffman Stadium. I want to talk about an area that on paper looks like it is going to be drastically improved from a year ago, and that is the bullpen.
Yeah, and I guess what we kind of deem would make a good year for them. Anything inside you are a top 10 performing bullpen is a win. Huge win in Major League Baseball, and then top half, I would say, or top five in the American League, most importantly, is even bigger than just the league-wide bullpen-related stuff. They need to be, based on the investment they have in here, they traded for Hunter Harvey, they traded for Urseg. They've given up. They gave him good prospect for Urseg. And they got years of control. They spent good money on Estevez. Like, if you're going to do that and revamp this whole thing and put some of your other guys, like former first-round picks like Daniel Lynch in there, this needs to be a top 10 bullpen for it to be a good year or successful year based on the resources I think they've put into it.
Last year, just for reference, the bullpen had 4.13 ERA, third worst in the majors in strikeout rate. That was the biggest issue, right? Who did you trust to go get that big out? And until Urseg arrived, the answer was really nobody. Like, who did you try to go get that one out? You need the big strikeout. They didn't have that until Urseg arrived. They were third worst in the majors in strikeout rate, 20.8. And then they were in the middle of the pack with a walk rate. So when you're worst in strikeouts and you're middle of the pack in walk rate, you get the bullpen that they
had. You're going to get your ass kicked a little, yeah.
Both those should be improved. I mentioned Carlos Estevez, that his walk rate was down 50% last year from where he was the year before. That's a great sign heading into the season, and obviously it's why he got a nice little deal from the Royals.
Even more so than the walk stuff, which again, they were middle of the road on, the strikeouts were the biggest problem. That's where like MacArthur and other guys just ran into problems. It was, you were good just as long as you weren't getting in trouble, but every pitcher would get in trouble eventually, and because you didn't have the strikeout to get yourself out of it, there was no saving it. And so, like, they just ran into this problem. And obviously, the second they brought in Urseg, that dramatically changed the number, right? And when they bring in, and Harvey was supposed to be a part of that, but obviously couldn't be because of the injury and everything else with it. Look, it's, I'm not going to claim to you that it's like an easy task to get there, but that's how I'm judging them based on success, because of the amount of resources they put into it. More than anything else, they were a bottom 12 ERA team in the bullpen last year. More than half of baseball was better than them. And because in their division, the team with the number one ranked bullpen, by a mile, by the way, Cleveland was first in the league. Detroit was fourth in the league. Like, you know, like some of the teams you are up against, the Twins were ahead of them. The teams that you are going to be battling this year, they got a better bullpen than you last year. You're going to have to up your game in that regard. It should be so much better. Like, that's where things could go bad in a hurry, is that I'm way off here and the bullpen's not way much better. Yeah. And it's still a problem child.
Well, and because if you believe the starting rotation maybe takes a slight step back, it doesn't mean they're going to be bad, but if a guy like Seth Lugo comes back to the pack a little bit, do they have an injury in the rotation? They were so fortunate a year ago that Michael Lorenzen and Michael Walker were the only two starting pitchers that got hurt at any point. Michael Walker had a short IL stint, and then he came back, and of course he was really, really effective, at times their best pitcher even. So if one of those guys doesn't stay healthy, and you have to take somebody from the bullpen and move them in the rotation, or later on, the unknown there too is there's multiple guys starting the season on the IL. Yeah, Kyle Wright, we don't know. He could end up being a huge asset to this team later in the year. MacArthur's on the IL. I understand last year didn't go the way you wanted, but maybe at some point he's got a role again in the bullpen. Now that it won't be asked to be high leverage, he'll just be a guy in the bullpen. That might be better for
guy,
him.
Fifth guy down the list.
I need to be able to wear that MacArthur shirt again. Otherwise, it may never be worn again.
Just put it on. What do I care?
Are you going to wear it tomorrow?
Do you think the MacArthur's ninth infantry,
it will not be there
banner
tomorrow,
will be in the Cody and Gold garage sale?
Will
that be available for
where
purchase?
Where is that banner? Is it still in the room? Yeah.
Will be available for purchase at the Cody and Gold garage sale?
I think it needs to be listed. Yeah. The garage sale, we'll have more information on that. We're working on it. It's coming back in June.
Yeah.
Fifth annual.
Ooh, big year.
That's right.
That's the Wood anniversary,
I think that's right, yeah. Someone else says the other thing about last year, there were big stretches where they couldn't score a lot of runs. Oh, sure, we're just on bullpen right now. But absolutely, there's a variety of areas that the Royals either are going to have to improve if another area is going to dip, or we're going to be talking about this being a disappointing season. I think they have a bullpen that's going to elevate if there's a concern with the rotation at all this year at times. And the question really, bigger than the bullpen, is does the offense elevate? Because if the starting rotation is not as effective and the bullpen improves, but not to the extent we think, well, then the offense better. Otherwise, yeah, you're going to go from winning, getting in the playoffs to not making the playoffs all of a sudden.
The truth is, I think the offense has the lowest floor. The offense, because a barring injury, right, has the lowest floor. I'll just be honest. Vinny, Bobby, Salvi, India, those are proven Major League Baseball performers. The players who were all counting on to have better years, they all didn't have good years last year. So, like, if they all just don't have good years again, oh no, we're in the same spot. Massey was hurt and had an okay year. So he had an okay year. MJ, bad year. Renfro, bad year. Like, all the guys that were saying, hey, can they have a good year? They're not coming off good years and that we're asking them to once again do it. They're coming off bad years. So if anybody provides a better than bad or average year, I would say in Massey's case, well, then you're fine. The biggest floor is still the bullpen because it's put together. It's brand new. We haven't seen all the pieces work together. We don't know. But they might have – the starting rotation has the highest ceiling, in my opinion. There's still limitations to where the offense can go. As far as, like, let's just say lowest four is in likelihood they finish 25th or worst in their known categories, or likelihood they finish first in their known categories. The bullpen could be the number one bullpen in the league this year, the easy. It has the highest ceiling to be that.
Yeah,
the offense isn't going to be the number one offense.
No.
The starting rotation, maybe the number one, but I think less likely because they still got to rely on four and five, and there's teams with just like number one ace starters at two and three spots, including the Dodgers. But like,
it looks like they have multiple guys that are going to be able to go get the big out of the pen that they didn't have last year. That's what it looks like. Where right now everybody's healthy in the bullpen. Right now we haven't seen anybody fail yet. All that is true, but it looks like they have multiple pieces that can go and actually get the big time out. You know, I'm bullish on Estevez. We just did our bold takes earlier at the start of the show. I have him making the All-Star game in a career high in saves. That's my bold take for 2025. So if that happens, then what we're discussing right now at the bullpen will be the game.
It's a lot easier. Yeah, for sure. We're going to talk about that more if you guys missed it. Get yours. We like you on paper on this show. I don't like when people, like, 6 months later, like, I had the Royals at 110 wins.
Yeah, Drew is saving every single text of your bold Royals takes, and he's coming for you in September or October.
I just want you to be able to back it up. We can scroll back through old texts you've sent.
That's right. That's right. We'll get to the trash of the day here in about 6 minutes or so on Cody and Gold. I do want to briefly turn to the tournament because we will not spend time on this tomorrow. Frankly, it's opening day. But the Sweet 16 does begin tomorrow. And our tourney coverage here on 96.5 The Fan is brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views. We went through the top tier seeds and like, hey, who could maybe go on a run that's not Duke and Houston, these one seeds? What about just reseeding? Did you guys change your mind on any of the seeds?
Duke should be the one.
If you were to go and reseed,
more than
Duke should be the number one overall. Yeah. But like the four number one seeds have not changed. They should still be that. Duke, Florida, agreed. Auburn, Houston would still be my number ones in a reseed. The two seeds, Tennessee, Alabama, Michigan State, Kentucky. My only change, I'll be honest, I will take Michigan State off the two line, and I would put Texas Tech on the two line. You know, I'm bullish on Texas Tech. So I would leave Kentucky on the two line. But I would move Texas Tech into the two line. That means Michigan State would move down to a three seed along with Michigan, BYU, and Maryland. I believe I have my math right on that. And then that means the four seeds would still be, you know, I would have Arizona now as a four with Purdue and Ole Miss and Arkansas.
I think that the easiest change is Michigan State has looked like the worst two seed. Like they don't. Now, I will say Tom Izzo's wins above expectation in the tournament are nuts. In his college basketball career, like he is way better
Tom
at that.
Izzo in March, you know, how many times have we heard that?
It's true though. It's statistically true. He's so good at it over and over and over again. Look, it's not like they looked bad against St. Mary's or anything, Michigan State, but like, I haven't been like blown away by, or sorry, not that was Alabama against, but like
New Mexico,
New Mexico. I haven't been blown away by anything they did. The only other one I would consider doing is Alabama. Like, and not even for anything wrong with what they do. They're a really good team. I think they're a little more Jekyll and Hyde than the other ones. And I think they are the most likely out of any, including Michigan State, any of the ones or twos, to just lay an egg. It doesn't mean they will against BYU, is who I think they have tomorrow night.
Yes.
But I think that they are the most likely of all the ones and twos to just lay an egg out of nowhere. Anybody else agree with that, or am I crazy for thinking that about Alabama?
No, I think you're right. I think it's because of a matchup thing. Because I mean, that was the big question about them against St. Mary's. Is two completely contrasting styles of play, where I think if they like against Alabama could have serious problems against Duke for the same reasons that BYU could have serious problems against Duke. It doesn't matter whether it's the two or the six.
Yeah, the Alabama BYU tomorrow night. He's going to be the most entertaining game of the Sweet 16 round. It is the total keeps going up. It's 175.5, I think. No defense probably in the game. BYU can score. Bama can score. you know, if one of those teams has a slight off night on shooting, they're going home. I mean, I honestly think it's that simple. You know, I'll stick with BYU just for the sake of our Cody Engel bracket challenge. But that should be the most entertaining Sweet 16. Doesn't mean we're gonna have a buzzer beater in it. No, but just from if you like points, if you want to see maybe 190 points scored in a basketball game, that's probably the one for you.
The pace will be like that Wisconsin BYU game,
that was fun,
or the KU Arkansas game, where it's just back and forth, and it's going to be the entire
over 100
game.
Points in the first half, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually don't think because it's pretty chalky, it's hard to like totally reseed it in a way because like, all right, let's look at the lower seeds. BYU, Ole Miss,
Michigan,
Arkansas. It's like BYU would be the argument. You could say, maybe they played pretty good, but like they've run into trouble too. It's not like they've just cruised a victory with no questions asked, right? Like Purdue, Maryland, those teams kind of feel like they're playing like four seeds. They're playing well enough to continue, winning and playing well, but like they don't seem like better teams than anyone on that 1-2 line.
Going back the last 2 months, BYU has won every game they've played except for two, and that's when they played Houston. They've beaten everybody who has stood in their they were underseeded. They're playing way better.
You better have a great defense if you're facing, and Alabama doesn't, but you better have a great defense if you're playing BYU.
I kind of feel like Purdue's going to get hammered on Friday night. Like, I just feel like they played a 13 and a 12 seed. Neither shot impressively well. They got into a little bit of trouble with High Point.
Is this more just like a respect thing for Purdue?
Really,
is it more like
it's Purdue?
Is that what it is?
Maybe. I'm not gonna lie. That could definitely be a part of it.
And like you don't.
Some of it is respect I have for Houston.
Yeah, well, as you should.
Of it is like, again, another team where I've watched them like. You know, I've watched them, and like Kauffman Wren's been good in both, but it's just like
it's not the same Purdue team as they've had the last couple of years, which is why they're a four seed in the first place. And to your point, Cody, they've had an easier route maybe than some others, obviously with McNeese being in there.
Arguably
as well.
The easiest route based on the fact that pretty much no double digit seeds won the first 2 days. Purdue's had arguably the easiest route. High Point and McNeese State. I don't know that anyone's gotten to the Sweet 16.
Any of you think that Coach Cal can keep this surprise run going? They get to a Sweet 16. Nobody saw that coming. They're facing Texas Tech, who I don't have to tell you my feeling about them in the tournament.
I don't know.
But
I think they can.
Coach Cal has some time to prep for this one even more. I think this will be a really, really close game. I'll still stick with Texas Tech, but I didn't know if any of you had all of a sudden Arkansas making a run towards the Final Four.
I'm still with Tech.
I mean, it's not that I think Arkansas is a bad basketball team or anything like that. I don't know. I just think Tech's better. It's Tech. I guess this is the one thing I hadn't thought about with Tech for a while. What's their history of bowing out a little too early in a tournament?
Well, Texas Tech has been a national runner-up in the last 7 years or whatever it is. Yep. They've been in Sweet 16 a couple years ago as well. I mean, they have recent history has actually been pretty darn good. Remember, Chris Beard was the head coach there for a while. They had some really, really strong teams. That's why Chris Beard got the Texas job, because of the success that he had at the time at Texas
Tech. This is the third regional final they've made since 2017. Yep. Fourth regional final they've made, since 2017. Like you said, they were national runner-up not that long ago. They made it's kind of hard. Like, if you're making regional semifinals pretty regularly, four times in the last eight years.
Well, Texas Tech's basketball program has been over the last 7 years.
That's where I'd give, like, Cal the edge, right? I'd give Cal, like, Gold, if you're saying, hey, predict the upset, I would do that in a case where a coach like Cal, who understands how to win in the tournament, has been successful at doing it, is going against the team that, like, always finds themselves out too early, right? Doesn't consistently go deep into the tournament, even if they get there with a good team. In this case, that's just not the case with Tech.
Trash of the day.
All right, this one just has to do with a crazy option. I think crazy option that now exists. So we've all heard of like these buy now, pay later, Klarna, or what's the other popular one?
I don't know. That's always the one I feel like I see in my advertising.
I think it's one's called like Afterpay these other ones, right? We've all seen them. Maybe you've used them before as well. Usually for like, maybe hotel or apparel or whatever, not for food. So the what I'm discussing is a deal that was signed with DoorDash. Klarna now is partnering up with DoorDash to allow you to basically split your DoorDash order up into, I think it's 4 weekly payments or something like that, whatever Klarna is. So think about that. No, look, hey, you got to do
it. It better be a pretty big DoorDash order to justify that.
Hey,
for the whole office.
You
got to
do what you got to do, all right? Put food on the table, but like, We're now allowing people to finance their groceries or finance their Chipotle burrito that gets delivered for lunch. This is wild.
I guess the best case scenario, at least in this case, is like they can't repo that from you. They're not taking my burrito back. I ate it.
Yeah, like, it'd be bad, though. When you're going to get sent to collections for $25 lunch?
I mean, that would be not an ideal situation, obviously.
But this is so in a press release, DoorDash customers will be able to pay in full at checkout, split payments into four equal interest-free installments, or defer to dates that align conveniently with payday schedules.
No, don't finance
DoorDash. I've used Klarna for a pair of shoes I wanted once before. And totally, I was like, the shoe's going to be really cheap now. And over four payments? No big deal. I've done that before.
You're like, you know what? I actually can justify buying. I've never used it.
It's very easy. For food, though. For food.
It's a problem.
Should even be allowed to do this. And this is not saying, like, everybody's got to do what they got to do to eat and stuff. I'm just saying, is this a good idea allow you to basically have monthly payments or weekly payments for your dinner?
I've told you before on the show, I have never personally ordered DoorDash or Uber Eats in my entire life.
Yeah.
I think at the house, we had it once. Someone gave us a gift card and my wife ordered it once. I have legitimately never ordered it myself. I don't even have the apps.
Yeah, I have the app on my phone. The only time I've done it, I think I've told you, if I'm sick as a dog and I'm like, I'm not going to go out and get anybody else sick. Or when we were in Arizona, right, for the Super Bowl 2 years ago, I was sick, and I needed like Pedialyte and stuff, and I wasn't going to have it. You guys were working, and I was back at the Airbnb, and so I had Pedialyte and like a bowl of chicken noodle soup dropped off. Okay, those are the only time I ever use it. Otherwise, it's expensive, man.
That's largely what happens is like,
yeah, the fees.
Maybe about once a year, I'm like, what if we just ordered food here? And then I look on there, and I'm like, I will just drive my happy ass to whatever spot it is. I'm not, I've never, never, ever been able to justify it. So, like, the idea of, like, I'm finally going to do DoorDash, but I'm going to do my, all right, it's a $30 order for us and the kids, and I'm going to pay it in four equal installments of $7.50. No, thanks.
Take you a month to pay off the dinner you had with the family last night? Like,
if you're...
I wouldn't make it the four payments, by the way. I'd be like, I'm paying the rest of the stuff. This is ridiculous.
If you get a burrito from Chipotle, you're spending, like, $10-$11 after taxes. If you're having to split $11...
You probably shouldn't be DoorDash.
Into a 4 month payment, then you shouldn't be eating out, probably.
Yeah.
In general.
Groceries, I feel like I'll be honest. So, my parents, like when we were kids, they didn't have things like Klarna. You know what my parents used to do when we were kids? Float a check.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Write a check for groceries on a Friday or a Saturday because you know it's not gonna hit the bank till Monday when you pay, Drew.
Yeah.
You float a check in the day so that us TAP family kids could eat. Yeah. They float a check here or there. This is essentially kind of entering that territory where, like, hey, you need groceries for your family on a big DoorDash order, and they're going to give you a chance to pay for it four times over the course of it? I can hear you out. Makes some sense.
Give it as groceries.
For a single order, but that could be DoorDash or whatever. For a single food order, it seems kind of crazy, unless it's like, I'm ordering for the whole office. I'm ordering for 30 people.
Sure.
And I'm trying to, like, break this thing up a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, if they let me pay it in four equal installments, maybe I'd take the four equal
installments.
That's
wild. You know? That's wild, though. Like, look, if you're going to,
sounds weird.
Like, because I don't know what, pick whatever the nicest restaurant is on DoorDash, right? Like, if you're ordering the nicest restaurant on DoorDash, I don't know what it is. You're getting a steak delivered to your house. One, what are you doing? Two, if you can't pay with it right then, you're going to split up the steak dinner on Klarna?
Can I ask a question to someone who doesn't get DoorDash or anything? What's the quality degradation from when it gets to you? Like, for instance, a steak dinner, never a chance. I'm never, like, the quality difference between if I sat there at the restaurant and ate versus the time it got to me, no chance. Yeah. Or like, what is the degradation quality of a DoorDash order?
Like, the French fries would have to be soggy. Now, if you're getting, like, a sub sandwich or something, that's different. It's not going to probably be much different. But, like, fries or something, like, getting Chick-fil-A DoorDash to you, like, there's that bun on that chicken sandwich is going to be a little soggy, right?
That's what I'm saying.
You think
like,
so.
They wrap theirs in that foil. Maybe that one holds up better. Anyway, maybe. That's your trash of the day here on Cody and Gold. Up next, let's talk more about a trend that has been trending down for Patrick Mahomes since 2019, and I'm sure we'll find out another mock draft that just happened in the Chiefs Red Half Hour.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Hope the Wednesday is treating you guys right. So we all have acknowledged and seen with our own eyes that the offense of 2024 was nowhere near the offense of 2023 and certainly nowhere near the offense of 2019 and historically great offense of 2018 into 2019. And one of those reasons has been the lack of explosive passing plays, deep passes down the field. And there's some numbers that back that up. And so everybody more and more talks about, you know, average depth of target, right? And Mahomes this past season, sure, it was a lot of check down stuff. And it's just a combination of multiple things. A, his ability to throw the deep pass, the personnel at wide receiver, the offensive line issues, how teams are playing him. All this comes together. But Scott Bauska, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, over at Field Vision, they do a lot of, they have an app now that does a lot of analytical data, and they tie it in with sports betting. But we're not talking betting here. We're talking about how this tells us the offense is trending. So since 2019, Patrick Mahomes' deep ball has declined. Deep ball accuracy fell from 51%, which was number one in the league, to now dead last at 21%. Now, I disagree with some of the opinions they put in this article, like, quote, why his arm could end the Chiefs dynasty unless they fix this.
I probably wouldn't like that, put that.
I don't think Patrick Mahomes' arm is going to end the dynasty. That's crazy. But Patrick Mahomes, for example, in 2019, 13 touchdowns, two picks on passes, 20 or more yards down the field, 50.9% adjusted completion rate. That was good for first in the league. You go further down this season, Patrick Mahomes, three touchdowns, four picks in those same category, 21.4% completion.
Pretty bad.
If you're wondering, Russell Wilson led the league in this. So I don't know what that says. 48.8% success rate. Yeah, the moon ball that we heard about on the broadcast over and over. And we know since 2021, teams have started to play these two high safety looks, and that's why Mahomes now has a career low 6.3 yards average target, right? Average depth of target. So what gives here? How does this change? Is this just what he is now? Can he at least get to being an average deep ball thrower again? He once was the best. Was that just because Tyreek Hill and defenses didn't play him properly?
Tyreek definitely helped, dude. Let's admit that, like, Tyreek's ability to track a deep ball certainly did not hurt this. It's a multi-factor thing. Like, I guess here's the real question I would ask you. Is if in a neutral situation, offensive line, wide receivers created equal, amongst all deep passers in the NFL, where do you think Mahomes is? I think he's average. I don't think he's a bad deep ball thrower, but I'm not here to tell you that he's the 2019 version of himself either. Some of the things he does great are creativity, creating plays on the fly. They don't always come 20 yards down the field. It's the ability to use his legs and his brain to find guys that other people wouldn't find. It's not always whipping it 40 yards down the field and hitting a guy in stride. I don't think there's been any particular point in his NFL career that was the immediate thought that I came to versus the other. And so I don't view it that way, I guess, pretty regularly. And instead, I view it in the sense that, like, he's an average deep ball thrower. And if you give him medium-level tackle play and medium-level deep wide receiver threats, he'll be average and not terrible at it. I can't deny the fact the last couple of years he's been terrible at it. So if this trend continues for another couple of years, I am probably going to have to start thinking of him as just a straight-up bad deep ball thrower.
Yeah, I think the question I would have, if he gets back to this, if he has what we would consider a stable tackle situation, and he has a wide receiver room of Worthy, Rice, and Brown that are healthy. And I understand, like, that's the name of the game, right? Injuries happen. But if they are healthy, does that automatically jump him up? Or is it just who he is now? Because they had some receivers back.
He's a little gun-shy. I don't think he throws it as well as he used to.
Yeah, I think some of it, you know, there's reasons why he's become gun-shy, right? Like, some of it is the defensive play. Some of it is not trusting his offensive line. Some of it is just him, yes. We know way back when Tyreek Hill, one of the best trackers of the football in the air.
Yeah.
Right? One of the best. Mecole Hardman, they thought that would be him. Didn't turn out that way. Struggles to track the football. MVS struggled to track the football. Last year, Worthy at the end of the season figured it out a bit. But remember, a good chunk of the year, we said, hey, despite the progress he's making, his field awareness, not great. He was stepping out of bounds. And so
think about where it would have been if they just gotten like those two or three misses on Xavier Worthy last year. He'd probably be league average or better.
Yeah. So I wonder if that in its own right helps this, where you go from dead last to all of a sudden you're 10th in the league in this exact same category. If your O-line's a little more stable and you have the weapons you thought you were going to have, that might solve a lot of this. I don't know. That's what we're going to find out here in 2025.
This goes back to the draft stuff that we've discussed before, but if I were prioritizing the Chiefs offseason, obviously number one would be don't get your ass kicked in the offensive line. You can't be an embarrassment there anymore. Okay, that's a problem. Number two for me would have been, hey, we're bringing back the fun on offense here, okay? It's enough with the doldrums over the last couple of years. We have to, and I mean have to, find a way to be more explosive. How can on one side of the ball, Steve Spagnuolo for years parrot and say the things that most guys do, which is like, the only thing we care about is just stopping explosive plays. That's what gets us in trouble. That's how we get burned. And then the offense be like, what if we did zero? What if we had zero explosive plays? And they won 15 games in the regular season, 17 overall. There was a clip from Andy Reid in an interview. He's like, I don't want to lose sight that we lost or that we won 17 of the 19 games or 17 of the 20 games, right? We played this year. And I think he said 17 of 19 because same thing. He's not really counting that final week of the regular season. They win a huge percentage of what they do. But then part of you is always the same thing. God, if you had the offense to go with this defense at the same time. And I know you already went in Super Bowls. So it's not, again, you went two in a row. You went to three in a row. I'm not here to be like, it's all falling apart. But that feels like it would just make a Super Bowl lock if all of a sudden your defense stayed on par with what it's been and you had happy learned to putt, right? You learned the deep passing game again. Mahomes is a part of it. I think some of it is that he has come a little gun-shy with it. I don't think he lets it rip the way he used to because of maybe the offensive line stuff, but there is a loss of confidence in the deep ball, I think, out of Mahomes, because we see it way more at training camp, way more at OTAs. Right. We see that they want to incorporate it. When we get to games, they don't do it.
Yeah, and Drew, you brought up the offensive coordinator switch during this run as well. I think if we're being fair across the board, huge chunk of this is Mahomes. A piece of the pie is the switch at OC. The other part is different wide receivers. The other part is offensive line. Like, I think there are four different things, whatever, that have contributed to this. First and foremost, it's the quarterback. But that is it solvable? If you think a good chunk of it is just personnel based, well, then you believe this will go back in the other direction here very soon.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument for it. But again, I don't know. I just don't.
I'm not saying he's going to be number one in it again. I don't know if that's ever going to happen again.
No, I agree with you. I think he's a league average deep passer. I don't think he's just, I think Tyreek Hill and a better offensive line and all these things were probably like juicing the stats in 2019. But I think for the same reasons, I don't think they're just dead last, okay? I just don't think that that's the case. And so
if you would have put him throwing as many deep balls as, I don't know, take whatever random quarterback is 16th, you think that...
I just think he's thrown so little that the variance is you screw up too. Like Xavier Worthy steps on a sideline miss someone a little bit, you create your own problem anyway.
For the context, in that 2019 season when Mahomes was the number one most accurate deep ball passer in the league, some of the other quarterbacks that were off. So he was there's a graph that's out there from Field Vision, and way off to the right in a positive way is Mahomes. And in that particular season in 2019, Josh Allen was actually dead last.
Now, where Josh was he last year,
So Josh Allen, who was an MVP this past season, in the most recent year, he was like middle of the pack. Literally, there's a line. He's a little bit to the left of average. 32% or something like that is where it looks like based off the graph. The best last year was Russell Wilson, then Sam Darnold, then Bo Nix, Herbert, and Rodgers. Dead last was Mahomes. Then he was kind of near Caleb Williams and Anthony Richardson. That was the company he was in. And this, again, one particular metric, EPA on throws 20 plus yards down the field.
How many deep balls did Josh Allen throw? If he was towards the middle of the
pack? I'm not sure. Okay. I don't have that in front of me.
Because Cody, you were saying he was one of five from Mahomes. Like if Josh Allen threw, let's say 17 deep balls, that's 12 more opportunities from Mahomes to hit on four of those, and if four of those hit, all of a sudden he finds himself right up there in the middle of the pack, for all we know.
The breakdown, again, this the site did a good job of breaking this down. Mahomes is 3 of 16 on deep throws to Xavier Worthy, 18%. Only two players with 16 or more deep targets have lower completion rates, Caleb Williams to Rome Odunze and Bo Nix to Troy Franklin.
I feel like
it's a mix of both to blame for that, because Xavier Worthy, and knowing where he is on the field, tracking the football, and then you see a little bit of an overthrow or a step off. And that's something that'll be better over time, I would assume.
But they also had the worst depth of target. Like, they threw deep less than any team in the NFL last year. Not than any team in the division, not in the AFC, then in the league. I know we're going to get to probably a mock draft here in just a minute. I just saw Albert Breer did say the NFL is adding two things to the competition committee proposals docket next week, including making the new kickoff permanent and tweaking it, moving it to the 35, as we had previously discussed, allowing for onside kicks to be declared at any time to go with that, not just in, like, for instance, like in a Super Bowl, right? Why the hell wouldn't the Chiefs? Like, they were down four touchdowns in the third quarter. They should just be able to start onside kicking. And also expanding the scope of replay. And it appears the biggest scope of the replay officials would be for, and I'll be honest, as you know, I've grown less and less fond of replay. I hate it. Roughing the passer and looking at whether or not the head and neck area or if players are hit out of bounds are appropriate and if those fouls should or should not be called. I hate either adding or taking. Like, I don't want you looking at roughing the passer.
I want it to be pass. I just think it should be reviewable.
Fingernail on the helmet, and he's going to get a call.
Reviewable via challenge. I don't like the idea of just any roughing the passer penalty automatically is getting reviewed, unless we have the quick expedited review process, which did work at times in other areas in the league last year. But I would rather just be, it's a challengeable play. If you really think your quarterback got, or your defensive lineman, I mean, got screwed on a roughing the passer, use one of your challenges. And I know the pushback on that is, well, they shouldn't have to correct.
They shouldn't have to give you more.
You're saying it'd be like the pass interference one.
That they won't ever overturn it. Yeah, but and there's some people, I'm sure, out there saying, well, they shouldn't have to challenge a call like that. I get it, but I don't like the idea that every roughing the passer penalty would potentially be reviewed automatically. It has to be quick then. We got to do this thing really quick.
Yeah, sky judge. But also, again, I don't want it because roughing the passer by the letter of the law should sometimes not be roughing. This should be like let's use some common sense here. If my hand grazes across your helmet, I don't think I should be getting dinged.
You're saying it's
here.
A judgment. It should be a judgment call more than black and white.
I truly think that if they overturn it, it will only go one way. I don't think that they'll never
overturn
it.
They'll only add it, not take it off.
Yeah. They're going to watch some guy get speared, and they can always make the argument like, I do think he used his weight a little bit, or I do think he technically touched his helmet or his face mask. So, sorry, oopsie. There's a million reasons why you can call roughing. It's so gray. And instead, they'll just add for all the ones that get missed. So, like, Mahomes in the Super Bowl got punched in the face. That is a roughing the pet. He did. That's like a roughing.
I know.
It wouldn't have changed the game outcome. That's not what I'm here to say. But that would have been.
It's just funny the way
they overturn.
I mean, it did happen. Yeah.
They'll overturn that one, and they'll add more and more and more and more roughing calls. They'll never take them away. That's my fear.
The one you're going to see the most is, well, we're challenging that he didn't put his full body weight on the quarterback.
Yeah,
how the hell are you overturning that? That's going to be the most common one.
I'll just say right now, as a coach, you shouldn't even consider that a challengeable play. If they're dinging you on body weight, good. But I'm saying, like, if you're a coach, good luck convincing a ref watching a replay about the guessing if they put their body weight on a guy. No chance.
But under this proposal, they're not challenging. These would just be automatic reviews.
Out of curiosity. Yeah.
That's going to be one of those 3-minute reviews where they take a commercial break in the middle of it because it takes so long to actually figure it out.
Let's say that this rule had been in place for 10 years. If it had been, do you think they reverse this would be the true test? Do you think they reverse the Derek Johnson roughing the passer call from the Tennessee Titans postseason game?
Yes, that one was so bold.
Okay, because I was about to say, if your answer is no, then there's absolutely no point to this
rule. I thought you were going to give me the example, the one that wouldn't have got overturned, which is the one involving Tom Brady and the Patriots, where Chris Jones had his fingertip on the helmet or whatever it was, right?
That one's even... The Derek Johnson one is the most aggressive roughing the passer.
That one would have been overturned.
He just hit him.
That one was overturned, but I don't know if they would have overturned the one from 2018, right?
He touched his shoulder.
I know, but because it was Tom Brady, they wouldn't have done it. This is the whole argument people have had about Mahomes getting favorable calls.
Yeah.
Tom Brady would have got that as well. All right, that sound means another mock draft has been released.
Yeah, Mike Tannenbaum over at ESPN decided
Jets GM.
He decided to play GM.
He was a GM once. He got fired or quit? Fired, probably, right?
Yes. I would assume so. That's why he's on TV now. So maybe you don't want
just
me to
quit.
Maybe you don't want me to do this, Mike.
Okay.
But Mike Tannenbaum played GM for the Kansas City Chiefs. And at pick 31, he has them taking Nick Emanwori from South Carolina, the safety.
Ah, I've heard the name.
Very good athlete in general. This seems like a best available pick to me more than anything else. And also based on his description, saying later on in the description, offensive tackle is obviously also an issue, but the value is better with Emanwori. Minnesota's Ariante Ursary would be the next offensive tackle on his board. So he might think maybe there's not a tackle that's there that I'd like, so I'm going to go ahead and go with Nick Emanwori, who's the best player on my board, essentially. Best player available. He also references losing Justin Reed in free agency. It's an easy pick for the Chiefs.
I'm going to say, based on some of the names you've had to pronounce during the mock draft center, this is an all-world year for difficult-to-pronounce names.
Yeah.
Between
this
that
one's a
Harms earlier, man, there's all kinds of names you got there. Okay. You know my general stance on safety in the first round. It's just a hard no. Like, most of the time, it's like a pretty firm, there better be some,
unless you
like,
think he's a future all-pro
he
safety.
He better be Kyle Hamilton or better. If that's what I'm taking in the first round, knowing their needs and the fact that they've spent a second round pick in Brian Cook, they've given free agency dollars two different times in a row. It's Tyrann Mathieu and Justin Reed. They have used second round picks multiple times. They have used assets on safety, I guess is my point. So like, I don't know that I want now a first round tossed into this too. I'd rather have a real corner.
For what this is worth, his RAS score would be second all time only behind Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, he
he's
ranked first in all the athleticism categories out of the combine, according to NFL Network as well. Like, in terms of for his position, for his size and all that, you are getting an athletic freak.
If you also move, if you moved him to linebacker, according to the RAS score, if you moved him to linebacker instead of safety, he'd still be a 9.87 out of 10.
Lance Erline says, elite blend of traits, Cody. Speed, versatility, has the skill to match up with top tight ends. Well, Brock Bowers is going to be in this lead, this division for a bit, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But also, they're not
weakness,
serious.
Weakness.
Brock Bowers could go for 300 yards every game against the Chiefs, and they're still never going to beat him.
Inconsistent downhill trigger and run support. Not going to be a run-stuffing guy. Not going to come up from the secondary and help you in run-stopping.
Man, he has Joshua Simmons going 13 overall. That was somebody that people are mentioning at 31. Well, I'm so confused.
Different opinions, different views.
He also has Sanders going 10th overall to the Steelers, slide.
I've seen more of Shador slipping down the board a little bit. I think Todd McShay recently said, he's a first-round grade on Shador.
Steelers at 10 would be fascinating.
If you're the Steelers, if he's available at 10, if you're the Steelers, I think you have to, if you think for whatever reason he might be the guy, you have to move up and at least try. And it allows you to skip
Sanders gets drafted by the Steelers, sits behind Aaron Rodgers for a year.
Okay. I mean, if you draft Sanders, get out of the Aaron Rodgers game anyway, but definitely if they draft Sanders, he
might just play. In all honesty.
I'm saying, but do we have Aaron Rodgers' decision before the draft?
I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to be, I don't know if he's going to have a team.
He's going to retire?
If I were the Steelers, you obviously would like to get a quarterback in the room, but if you're the Steelers and I would say you either ride Mason Rudolph for the year or you see if you can get a quarterback in the draft that you like, and if Shador's there, you take him and he plays. And you don't have to deal with Aaron Rodgers at all whatsoever being in the room. You just have Shador. He's the guy. Your team's still ready to win. And you skip the whole quarterback phase of, well, we're in purgatory and we can't find a good quarterback if he ends up working out.
Sanders is there for the Steelers somehow, then yeah, I think it's you're crazy if you don't draft him if you're Pittsburgh at that point in time.
I will say in this mock draft, Jackson Darko's in the first round. Mm-hmm. No burden. Right?
So we've seen that way more often over the last couple of weeks now.
We just had Daniel Harms on in the 10 o'clock hour today. If you missed it, you'll hear it again in the 1 o'clock hour from Draft Network. And he says he doesn't get it. He's still, much like Matt Miller, he still thinks Luther Burden ultimately will be in the first round.
Derek Harmon would have still been available.
They picked Emanwori over Harmon?
Yeah.
Wow.
Here's the thing.
All right.
I'm guessing he's basing this on the idea that there are so many defensive linemen that nobody is going to, like, jump up early and get it. Because if you go through it, like some of the guys who are going early, right? Like Graham and Abdul Carter and some of those guys are going. But after he gets back like past like pick 15, everyone just takes positions that are not defensive linemen, essentially. Matthew Golden, Pierce, I guess, who's an offensive lineman, guard, linebacker, safety, running back. You know, like it's a bunch of, like there's way less defensive linemen than I think you would imagine.
He has Jackson Dart going to the Rams. I kind of like that, actually.
He also
has
Colston Loveland going 22. And if he starts getting that like 24, 25 range, I am interested. I don't think that's a realistic one that we ever need to discuss with the Chiefs. But if he's somewhere in the 23, 24 range, I am back interested. I don't think it's going to happen on draft day. I think teams
always surprises on draft day. Everybody thinks they got it figured out, and then there's always surprise. Nobody thought Michael Penix was getting drafted by the Atlanta Falcons when we were, at our draft party last year.
That was stunning.
And then boom, and now I guess it's paid off. You know, I still question how they handle their entire offseason. But yes, now it looks like, oh my gosh, they have Michael Penix. Thank goodness, because Kirk Cousins sucked. Yeah, well, maybe you shouldn't have signed Kirk Cousins to begin with.
I think if you're the Bears, you make this trade, right? So that trade involving the Steelers and the Bears would get 21, so they'd move back 11 spots. The Steelers' third round, fourth round for this year, and next year's first round. Yes. I think given that you have Caleb Williams, that is exactly what you're looking for. I think if you're ever going to trade back from that 10th spot.
Yeah, if you're the Bears, you do it in a second. They've also spent a lot of money in free agency to try to shore up some of their problems, and they're hoping just coaching will make a difference, kind of like it has in a lot of other spots over the course of time.
That's the latest mock draft that's out there. Okay.
Interesting.
Well, Mike Tannenbaum.
It's a new one.
Yep.
Safety. How's he pronounce his name again?
Nick Emenwori.
Emenwori.
I think as soon as you say it a couple times, you got it down.
That one's not as bad, yeah.
Emenwori is not a terrible name to try to pronounce. I'm with you. I'm with you guys on that
just
one.
Just call him Nicky E. I don't know. He probably doesn't like that.
Is that something people call him?
No. Oh. That was off the cuff. That was off the cuff.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Up next, we'll get to what's trending here on Cody and Golden. I want to talk a little bit more about the boldest take you have for this 2025 Royals season. Maybe it's positive. Maybe it's negative. Maybe it's a player's performance. That's coming up next.